Penguin Random House Audio presents Say, Say, Say by Lila Savage. Read for you by Lisa Flanagan. For Essie, in memory of G. Chapter 1. Later, looking back, Ella would be hard-pressed to remember any details that had set this interview apart. It was sad, but then it was always sad, or Ella wouldn't be needed. She had been working as a companion for elderly people for 6 years, and somewhere along the way, sadness had lost its power to shock Ella the way it once had. It still reached her, but it was like recognizing a flavor, like eating a jelly bean without looking first to see what color it was. Oh, this, she might think. I know this taste. This is incremental loss. This is trying to remember. This is regret. This is forgetting, forgotten, gone. This flavor is grief. Jill was different from most of Ella's other clients. She was young, only 60, the victim of an accident rather than the mental and physical crush of age. The tragedy of such premature loss was unfamiliar to Ella, but she stepped up to it dutifully, felt for its contours, pressed the tip of her tongue to its bitterness, and ultimately shouldered its weight. What was her burden compared to Jill's, compared to those who loved her? She had liked them immediately and more than usual. She felt they might have been friends, ordinary friends, were the circumstances ordinary, which of course they weren't. Nick, Jill's son, was only a few years older than Ella, and he had an endearing sincerity to him. Not earnestness, but an unusual frankness, as though he couldn't be bothered to dilute his humor or irritation or sadness into the tepid, circumspect conversation of most people. His father, Bryn, had an easy charm about him, and only his increasing talkativeness as he warmed up to Ella betrayed how isolating his circumstances must be. They had been dealing with the aftermath of Jill's car accident and head injury for more than a decade now. Jill had seemed mostly herself for a while. But then came the crying, and the tantrums that seemed out of all proportion. And now she was sometimes like an advanced Alzheimer's patient, mumbling semi-coherently, wandering around, requiring near-constant supervision. Bryn had retired 3 years earlier to care for her, and her needs had only grown since then. Nick helped as much as he could, usually on weekends, but he and his wife lived up in Hinckley and couldn't realistically drive into Minneapolis more than once a week. They had gathered in the living room for the interview, with Ella a lonely figure on the puffy leather couch, and the two men standing, as though resting might betray how weary they truly were.
"I hope this doesn't sound creepy," Nick said, "but once I learned your full name, I checked to see if we have any Facebook friends in common. You know Trent Olson?"
She nodded, and he smiled with real friendliness, although there was a restlessness to his bearing that had probably read as hyperactivity when he was a child, and now that he was in his 30s, looked more like athleticism, maybe. But though his was the kind of masculinity that held little appeal for Ella, she watched for cues he might be flirting with her. Nick excused himself to go check on Jill, leaving Bryn and Ella to themselves. Bryn seemed pleased that he would have more time to explore interests outside of caregiving, and also pleased that he had someone to discuss it with.
"We're too deep into spring to do everything I want in the garden," Bryn said. "But soon there will be tons of green beans to pick, and raspberries and zucchini, and then we'll really get into tomato season. Jill used to be able to help with the harvesting, but not anymore. I could occupy her for nearly an hour at a time picking raspberries on a nice day, until eventually she began to see it as a chore. And then she could no longer do it anyway."
He relayed these stages of decline with what seemed an easy candor.
"Do you grow any rhubarb?" Ella asked.
"Not really on purpose, but there's some that keeps stubbornly coming up on the side of the house."
"I like to make chilled sweet rhubarb soup. It's so summery.
But I live in an apartment now, so I can't grow my own. And it seems wrong to buy rhubarb in a grocery store.
I know what you mean. When Nick was small, he would take a juice glass of sugar out to the rhubarb patch and break stems off to dip and eat. It's not a grocery store kind of food.
Again, Ella checked to see how this nostalgia registered on Bryn's face, and found that his eyes were smiling with an uncomplicated cheerfulness that matched his grin.
I'd like to sign up for a community ed class or two also, Bryn said. Since I retired to take care of Jill, I haven't kept pace with the latest technology for carpentry.
As he described the dimensional capabilities of computer programs for woodworking, Ella decided they would become friends. A more sentimental or less experienced caregiver might have assumed that this didn't require deciding, but Ella had done some version of this many times with others, and had learned early on the benefits of some degree of detachment. Ella usually found clients through her Craigslist ad, and sometimes through word of mouth because an agency would take too large a cut and would require her to have a car. Her first client had been her friend Jake's grandmother, whom she had known and cared about before the fog descended. Ella had been job hunting after dropping out of graduate school when Jake's mom had asked, "Could you visit my mother a few days a week?" At first, Ella had been shocked that she could earn even a meager living this way, $15 an hour to start, $20 after the first year. Just listening to Betty's meandering stories, making sandwiches, playing checkers, feeding the ducks. With Betty, Ella had remained wide open. As the weeks and months progressed, the air between the two women had become charged, like metal or water conducting electricity. The pangs of loss and death, intermittent, but shocking. If Betty didn't answer the door of her senior apartment, Ella would feel panic swell in her throat. Her body would prepare itself for impact as she scurried to find some staff member with a master key. Each time, Betty would have been napping or getting her hair done in the basement of the building or using the bathroom. And Ella would cry with relief, shaken and grateful. Like the mother of a child who has stopped one step away from the path of a speeding bus. This was not a sustainable response. Not for all the work days in a week, all the weeks in a year, 6 years, half a dozen clients and counting. And so Ella had learned to step in and out of grief, to sample it on demand. She didn't seek to block it out entirely because the poignancy was among the few rewards of the job. It was a strange way to make a living. The slow creep of hours, the tedium of domesticity and isolation, morning talk shows bleeding into drowsy afternoon soaps, all pierced with looming mortality and surreal delusions. She would succumb to the boredom and drift as though submerged in a lake. The cool water would tug her gently. Sounds were muffled. It was tranquil. And then something would compel her to burst through the surface and confront the frailty and sorrow and humiliation of decline. For a moment, she would be fully present in this sadness, porous in her empathy. It was almost unbearable, but at the same time, it seemed like a gift to feel so much. She began to feel rather than know that the promise of death infused the adrenaline of living. And she was grateful to have this lesson at so little personal cost, because the tragedy belonged to someone who'd begun as a stranger. Ella alternated between certainty that her true talents were wasted in this unskilled service work, and another kind of certainty, that each action she took mattered. Whether it was changing a soiled disposable brief with kindness and tact, or listening to a tedious reminiscence for the thousandth time, so that someone whose self was slipping from them might clutch it for a moment longer. The truth contained both of these elements, but was far more complicated. Ella had other talents, though perhaps none were greater than these. What were her elaborate meals or mediocre paintings to anyone but her? And if this caregiving, this tact and empathy, represented the best she had to offer, then it was also true that she offered these gifts as infrequently as she wrote her occasional poem. More often than not, she browsed through.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?